we are recording. So after many years of a bit of tit for tat on the internet in different ways, finally, Ben, we are spending some time together to have a conversation. So welcome to the podcast.
Literally years. That's crazy. I remember back when, man, this was 2022, I think, maybe, where I was really just going through listening to a bunch of Bitcoin podcasts, and yours was one of the ones that I listened to. So before I even had a podcast, over a year before, I was already listening to you. We tried to connect a year after that, and it just never happened. We've had crazy schedules bouncing all over the place. So I'm super glad we get to finally do this, man. This is great.
Yeah, let's do it. And you at the time, you were building your website, Why Bitcoin Only, which I was so impressed by when I went through it. And you just don't really know where your content ends up sometimes. And you had literally tweets of mine that you'd found like helpful. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like people curate this stuff and keep it. And then it becomes valuable in different ways that you can't possibly imagine. So really cool, Ben. Okay, so how I want to kick off today is, what are you most excited about working on at the moment?
Oh man, I would say my podcast is my main project right now. If I can just go for the personal side here, that's what I'm working on. That's what I'm most excited for. I just think that more broadly, this is such a great time for everyone on earth who has something to say, which I believe is everyone. They have a different perspective. They have absolutely zero friction to getting their voice out there. And as you and I are both learning, as you can bring other voices out there. So anyone who feels like they can just understand people well can help spread an important message. And so this extremely fast broadening of knowledge and increasingly not giving a fuckness about the political correctness of that knowledge is also very exciting to me. Just the fact that more and more people are saying the entire truth, letting it all out. They don't care if they're called a mean word on the internet anymore. They're just saying it. And the Overton window is shifting extremely quick. We're seeing this happen in so many different topics. And anyone that follows me on Nostr knows I'm always trying to push that window faster, because what else is Nostr for but a place to just let loose on all free speech, because it's the only place you can't get banned for it. So I think it's super exciting to see Bitcoin and Nostr both coming at the exact time we need, empowering people. And there are so many people out there with so much more knowledge and signal than me to share, but someone's got to break the door down and start that happening on these freedom protocols that we have and just build a better foundation so we can bring those other voices over. And that's really what I'm most excited about, is just seeing in these next couple of years, hopefully, a massive influx of new voices onto Nostr and into Bitcoin, as always, helping this push toward creating a better future for the world.
Yeah, amen to that. And what a great goal. I think what's fun about this idea of like creating a better future for the world is, and some of the topics that you are very bravely opening, you know, debate should be allowed about everything. If you don't agree with that, you simply don't agree with freedom of speech. And that's very inconvenient to some people. But it is an extraordinary time in that sense, isn't it? Like, what the hell is going on around us? You mentioned your podcast you're most excited about. Just teach me, like, why did you start? Why are you so excited about it?
Yeah, so I started the podcast, which I just made my own name because I'm boring like you. I can't think of names well. The Ben Werman podcast. It's also the most open and free. I'm really glad I did that. I thought about making a Ben's Bitcoin podcast or something stupid, but there's so many different rabbit holes we got to dive into and just so many different truth-seeking avenues that more and more people are open to. So I'm glad I just kept it completely open. But I started that for many reasons, but the primary reasons I would say, it's actually changed over the last couple of years. It's been almost 2 years now since I started it in August 2023 is when I started. So exactly 2 years, actually.
Cool. Congrats.
I started it with the goal of educating people on Bitcoin stuff, like so many other people are doing, just thinking we need to get people on board of Bitcoin, understand this. I didn't really have a whole lot of idea for what other topics I want to dive into, But very quickly after starting it, I fell into the rabbit hole of the carnivore diet and trying that myself, and I got way healthier. So I was like, I got to share about this too. So it goes into this long, you know, many dozens of episodes of just bringing on carnivore doctors talking about meat. And then it keeps expanding. We talk about Noster, and then we go into all sorts of other conspiracy theories. And I just love having a place where I can do both learning myself by bringing on these smart voices anywhere from any field that I am interested in at any given time. That's a huge blessing and a superpower. Building the network out and being able to connect other people as well. I've had a lot of people reach out to me and say, hey, I found this person through your podcast. Now we're working on a business together. So this is super cool. Like helping accelerate the network effect from people outside myself, which is super cool. And just the ability to encourage other people to do similar things, whether that be podcasting themselves, which I'll always be a proponent of. There's no such thing as too many podcasts, and there never will be.
Yeah, agree.
Being that abundance mentality, the more podcasts, the better. Decentralize that education. And any podcaster who's trying to talk you out of doing it, I am suspicious of. I feel like they're trying to just like clutch onto their market share for themselves, but this is not the mindset we want if we really truly want to change the world. So that is basically what I'm all about. Just asking questions, question everything is a huge North Star for me. Just making sure that we are always opening every single rabbit hole possible, because I think that that is something that a space that we didn't really have opened, in my opinion, in Bitcoin, which is someone who is going through every single rabbit hole possible, looking at all the conspiracy theories, questioning everything. We have people in Bitcoin sort of dabbling in other things, but I think we need more people to really just go full speed ahead on, we weren't just lied to about fiat, we're lied to about absolutely everything. So let's start from the beginning, start from scratch on everything, listen to all of these crazy conspiracy theorists who just happen to be right every single time, and listen to what they have to say and see what else is out there, because a lot of lies have been told, and it's important to follow these rabbit holes, I believe, and especially as Bitcoiners, where we have a strong conviction that we are going to hold a lot of power in the future with this new financial asset. We need to have our brain right. We need to know what the truth is out there. We need to get rid of these misconceptions before we have this power, so we can have the strongest possible foundation to understand the real state of the world and create the change we want to see.
Awesome, Ben. And so much of that also inspires me. So I think we're very aligned in that sense. What was interesting is that there are so many ways we can take this conversation, but I'm going to give a very specific example now of where my brain is breaking. And, you know, when you start asking that question, what is money? It takes you down this extraordinary rabbit hole. And you start to realize, hang on, someone's had the ability to print their own money for a long time. Like not just a year or two. When someone's had the ability to print money for an extraordinarily long time, and not just a year or two, but like over multiple generations. So my father, as an adult, well, they printed money. And even before then, there's been different formats of that. So like multiple generations now, someone's had the ability to go and print their own money. And when you start digging into what that means, it is nefarious, because it has ability to hold huge influence in every single facet of life, be that health, be that education, be that business, be that money. And with that is, you know, just extraordinary power over narrative. And, you know, you look at the way that the academic world can be influenced, you know, write this paper, get paid, even if it's wrong, don't worry about it, we got your back. This morning, I was listening to your episode recently posted with Scott, and you were digging into the moon landings. And it was just a brilliant conversation to kind of tune into two guys who are willing to ask difficult questions. Scott said something about the ability for mass psychosis at scale, where everyone thinks the lunar landings are real. Like most people think that we've been to the moon, including myself until relatively recently. And it really breaks your brain. So like, what does that mean when we are lied to at that scale? That was something that Scott said that really caught my attention. It's so true. It's like, wow, like that's a massive lie. What does that mean? And I've said this many times before, which is like you have to ask yourself when you learn about Bitcoin, why do I own what I own? Because every other asset is basically going to pale in comparison. And B, why do I know what I know? So the lunar landings are just one example of this, where I'm like, what do you mean we haven't been to the moon? How can that not be true? So yeah, you've come across lots of subjects like that. Like, what incentivizes someone to lie at scale like that?
This is a great question, and give me just one sec here. I'm going to look up a quote, actually. In the big lie, there is always a certain force of credibility because the broad masses of a nation are always more easily corrupted in the deeper strata of their emotional nature than consciously or voluntarily, and thus in the primitive simplicity of their minds, they more readily fall victims to the big lie than the small lie. So they themselves often tell small lies in little matters, but would be ashamed to resort to large-scale falsehoods. It would never come into their heads to fabricate colossal untruths, and they would not believe others could have the impudence to distort the truth so infamously. Even though the facts which prove this to be so maybe it's brought clearly to their minds, they will still doubt and waver and will continue to think there may be some other explanation. For the grossly impudent lie always leaves traces behind it, even after it has been nailed down, a fact which is known to all expert liars in this world and to all who conspire together in the art of lying. Any guesses on who wrote that?
Not a clue.
Adolf Hitler, Mein Kampf, Volume really? 1, Chapter 10.
Yeah. Fuck. Intense. Wow. And that brings me very nicely to a subject that you're also delving into in a way that others, and including myself, I find deeply triggering. What do you mean the Holocaust isn't real? And even now I'm a bit like, what? That can't be true. And I think of a recent scenario with a friend who told me a story about their grandparents who had walked overland from Poland to Israel, got captured by the British, ended up swimming away from the prison camp they were in, and they then lived in a kibbutz in Israel and moved to the US and became Jewish migrants living in the US, and he's now third generation or second generation American or something. Real people that aren't also driving these kind of nationalistic agendas, but a very difficult subject. But that's a real story of a family member of theirs. Like, how could it be that the Holocaust is not real, you know? And so when you come into these subjects, like, how does it break your brain?
And this is such a hard one. It's the most triggering one ever, because we all spent so much time in our history classes in school watching Schindler's List, which is mandatory everywhere, which it's based on a fictional book, and the history books themselves, which were written by Glencoe McGraw-Hill, which is this company owned by Ghislaine Maxwell's dad, who's a Mossad agent. So all of our history books were written by Mossad, basically. And the entire mainstream media, also owned by the same group. And so this is the true definition of conspiracy, when you have all these different connections that push out a certain story that they want to be heard. And when you combine that with the people who are around during that time and part of that period, they all have a very strong incentive to keep saying what they say. And this is such a hard one to, there's no way to introduce the Holocaust conversation other than I want people, before listening to anything that I say, or anything that I've ever said about this, to go watch some movies about this. There are some really great documentaries that go through this topic very well and cover a lot of information. And I posted a lot of them on Noster. And one of them is this series. You've probably seen me spamming Europa, The Last Battle, which I think is extremely full of interesting questions. That series covers the entirety of fiat history and basically goes through a very different perspective of what actually happened during World War I, World War II, and the Holocaust, and all of these events we were taught about in school. Is it possible that there was a completely different side to it that we were never told? And that's what I recommend people go watch for themselves. And it is extremely triggering, like you said, and it will, you're not going to agree with things you see in that for sure. And I don't agree with everything in it either, but it just gives you a whole different side. It really opens your brain to the possibilities of history being very different than what we were told. And this idea that history is not black and white, cut and dry, the way that we're always told it is. When we're young kids and we're in school reading these textbooks, they look very official. We're told by a teacher who says this is the way it is, and we just assume that that's all fact. And like you were talking about, the moon landing is another example where we're told that that's what happened, this is the way it is, and it's a fact. And that's a great example of one where it doesn't take a whole lot of just looking at the details of it. And that's what I tried to do with Scott in that conversation, which I am glad to hear that you got some value out of it. A lot of people have reached out, really showing great feedback, because when you look at anything from the pictures of the lunar lander itself to, I mean, I don't even know where to start. There's so many pieces of that story, to calling them on the phone quarter million miles away, and it works better than I can call someone right now in another city. There's so many holes to the story. We lost the technology. By the way, the "we lost the technology" meme, the only two times we've ever lost technology for something are for moon landing technology and gas chamber technology that's able to gas 6 million people in a few years. So there's all sorts of these things that are pushed out there as a way to explain away these things that don't make sense. So the narratives of, oh, we lost the technology, that's just the way it was back then, we can't do it anymore. Well, why? Why can't we do it anymore? Maybe it just never happened in the first place, and we were given a really big story, because everyone's heard this quote, history is written by the victors, but a lot of people just sort of hear that, and they think, oh yeah, they repost it on Nostr and Twitter, they think it's a nice sounding quote. But no, what if all of your history was written by the victors? And none of it is true. And we need to start from zero and critical think our way through this from first principles, as I know Bitcoiners have the ability to do. And we are seeing that. And I'm very optimistic. More and more people are doing this and are watching the movies like Europa and these my podcast about the moon landing and these things that really throw a wrench in the entire narrative. And you don't have to agree with it. You're probably not going to agree with it, but we should be listening to these different radical ideas and come to our own conclusions about them. And it's extremely important for people to detach from the confidence that we have around these ideas of things we were taught in school, because so much of that was intentionally layered on top. And you hear this when you go into these conversations about any of these major questioning topics of things that were considered so solid and full of evidence by the mainstream narrative, is that people come at you angrily for questioning this thing. It's not just that you're an idiot for questioning this thing. In the Holocaust is a perfect example. People just say, how dare you question this event and ask questions about this thing that happened, because I watched 5 million Hollywood movies that told me that this happened, and you're a terrible person for even opening that door to think about things in a different light. And it's so crazy when you realize that there are so many other, just using the Holocaust example, so many other genocides have happened in history, including the Bolshevik Revolution, just years before the Holocaust happened, where the Jews killed 50 million Christians in Russia. And we never hear about that in the history book. And there's this really great conversation on, what was the name? Montel Williams Show, I think, where David Cole and these other historians come on there. I posted this on Nostr as well. If you just type in David Cole on my Nostr, it'll pop up. But some guy in the audience comes out during this heated discussion in the 90s about the Holocaust, when this was more allowed to question things. And he says, hey, I'm from Ukrainian descent. There was a genocide where Jewish people killed 7 million of my people. Where are my reparations? And there are just so many examples of these other genocides that happen. And there's only one that you're not allowed to ask questions about. And it's the one that when you ask anyone on the street, name the worst genocide ever. What's the most tragic event that ever happened? Who's the most evil person that ever lived? They'll all tell you Hitler's the most evil person that ever lived. The most tragic thing that happened was the Holocaust. Almost every time. And that's because our school system really printed that into our brain and completely forgot about all these other events that have happened. So it's all about asking questions, opening the door, questioning everything. Is like, we'll keep spamming forever. Just question the narrative and you'll get closer to the truth. And that's what I'm trying to do. People won't agree with me a lot of the time, but I think someone's got to do it.
I'm sure I saw a post somewhere that said, you know you're deep down the rabbit hole when you start to think that Adolf Hitler was the good guy. And you're like, who thinks that? And I even had a guy recently, he said to me, Jake, Adolf Hitler died years before the end of World War II. And everything you saw post that was actually doppelgangers. And it's just the state apparatus behind him that was doing what they wanted. So, you know, what's real? I can't go and verify that. It was, you know, over 50 years ago. And, you know, yes, I've watched Band of Brothers and, you know, in whatever episode they rock up and they're like, what the fuck is this camp or whatever TV show or movie you want to mention, Schindler's List not being obviously a classic. It's very confronting. But you're right. Like, if the victor can write the history books, and they have a money printer, like, what are they telling us? And if you don't have a healthy attitude towards questioning what that is, then, I mean, that has to be step one, right? Of course, you can spam all day long talking about this controversial stuff. If no one's actually going to sit there and go, okay, wow, what does that mean? Then it's pointless in some senses. So do you think you've always had a natural sense of curiosity? And what brought you to this point in that sense?
Oh, definitely not. I was an absolute turbo normie for most of my life, just a complete NPC. And that's one of the reasons why I started a podcast, is because I started waking up. I mean, this term waking up is such an interesting one because it's such a gradual process.
An NPC will think they're waking up sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's so many levels to it. That there isn't, I don't think I'm fully awake yet. I don't think anyone is. There's so many more levels to dig out, but it's a gradual process over time as you unravel more and more fake mistruths. But I would say I at least felt a huge jolt of questioning everything, disrespecting authority, and just knowing that I need to completely start from scratch around 2022, 2023. And starting the podcast was a big reason why I did that, is to really accelerate that and open the door to ask questions and have these conversations. So I certainly was not always that way. A lot of people would be shocked to hear that I was just gobbling down seed oils, taking all the vaccines just a few years ago. You know, this is brand new for me to really figure out all this stuff is a total scam. And I fell for it my whole life. And most people out there in our generation, millennials and Gen Z and everyone that's the young folks out there who are starting to figure this out, a lot of them didn't have a chance to figure this out any earlier because we were raised a certain way and this is the world we were brought up in. And so that's one of the things I really try to push as well is, hey, we've all fell for some scams and you have to be able to stop that now and not be super bummed and depressed that you made all these mistakes earlier in your life, because we all have, and make the changes you can now and really push for the better future you want. And to me, a big anchor point, which has helped me do that and not just get super depressed about whatever, all the flu shots I took every year of my life, and I know they're just straight poison now, was just thinking about the future. I really do believe the most important people we can be working for right now are the people who haven't even been born yet. I want to be thinking about thousands of years in the future, at least hundreds of years in the future, many generations down the future. I want this to be a better place than it was for us. And so that really helps put things in perspective of how, I don't want to say insignificant we are, because we are significant. That's not what I mean to say here, but just really put your major emphasis on the future and those like yourself who have families and are raising children and getting grandchildren. Those people understand this. And I think those like myself who are still a single dude running around the world, haven't started a family yet, certainly plan to. But we all need to adopt this mindset together, because I will be having kids someday. Certainly that's on the list. And we need to be making that top of mind now, that selfishness needs to be thrown out if we're going to fix a lot of the problems we see, which run extremely deep. We're going to have to make sacrifices. We're going to have to forgive our past selves for falling for a lot of these scams for a very long time and make sure that we don't let that drag us down. And the classic example in Bitcoin is that, oh, I wish I would have bought Bitcoin earlier. You know, we all heard about Bitcoin usually years before we ended up buying it, and we just think it was a scam. And then we just beat our past selves up. How could you be so stupid and not buy this immediately? Well, you're just going to dig your hole further and miss out on even more gains if you do that, because Bitcoin is just going to keep going up forever and you're going to miss the station where you are right now. So forgive your past self, fix the problems you had, reverse course or change course, and make your future better. That's what you do have control over. Everyone should be focusing on what they have control over all the time and not let the things they don't have control over rule over them.
That's actually a great philosophy for life that wasn't, funnily enough, taught to me. And it's something I had to learn as I grew older, and was taught to me in more of a sense of recent times, investing in personal development. And so kind of mindset coaches helping you think about, like, what are you actually doing with yourself and what is it you want to achieve, and really get your own shit in order first before you think about changing the world. And it's such a refreshing stance, because it's easy wins straight away when you start actually changing stuff for yourself. You know, go to bed at a different time, don't sit on Netflix all the time, change your diet, you know, fix your relationship, change your relationship, whatever it requires to refresh that energy. And something you've mentioned there is very, very powerful, which is this idea of the future and extremely long-term planning. I don't think it was really as possible to do until you hit the Bitcoin standard. And so it's this idea that I really love thinking through, where it's the typical Maslow hierarchy of needs, right? If you're at the bottom, how do I get my next meal? Where am I sleeping tonight? You get up another level. It's like, cool, I got that sorted. Now I really want to think about actually like permanent living arrangement. And then above that, you're then thinking about how you might re-educate yourself in an area you're actually passionate about. You might have a family, because you've basically you've built a better position of capital to work from. So what do you think the future does entail when we are able to build on top of Bitcoin?
Yeah, well, I think that everything becomes much more optimistic once we see a future where these current fiat restrictions are removed and eliminated. Because as we know, as we're talking about all these different lies that have been pushed on us over the decades of our lives, they all come from the fact that there is a money printer that funded these things. And we're in this paradigm where, and Saifedean talks about this a lot in the educational system and inventions and all sorts of other things, we're in a paradigm right now where all the giant businesses out there that are creating stuff are no longer incentivized to actually produce a service that people want to buy. It's much more profitable now just to suck up to the money printer and the politicians and the congressmen to win them over and just pay them off to get your to build a moat around yourself and destroy competition. So there's no wonder why people just feel like they're not being served right now in the marketplace. And one great example of this is the airports and the airline industry, the most fiat thing ever. I do a lot of flying. I think you do a lot of flying as well. And the experience just gets worse and worse and worse and worse because
awful.
These airlines are completely in bed with the fiat system. And we saw in back in 2020, I think it was, when all these airlines were in danger because people stopped flying because of the lockdowns. And then the government completely bailed them out. So all the ones that were overbloated and not prepared to go through that period were kept alive. And now they're still alive today. And now they know that they don't have to actually provide their service or make smart business decisions. They just need to have Congress in their pocket so they can just have an infinite life cheat code. And so that's why they treat us all like shit now. And they just don't care about the service they're creating. And this is everywhere. And in terms of just how we get there, one of the points that you mentioned earlier that I forgot to answer in the last question was how you don't know what the truth is about history. I don't know either. There could be completely insane theories out there I haven't even heard of that are the correct one. And none of us can go back in time with a time machine. Maybe once we're on a Bitcoin standard, someone will invent a time machine and we can go see for ourselves. But until then, who knows? Verify. Who knows? Every single World War II video we've ever seen could be AI. Maybe none of these people existed, maybe. Who knows? It's possible that like everything's completely, like, all of my tangents I've gone on and things I've shared could be completely wrong. It's certainly possible. But what I do know is that we can't be scared of talking about these things and having a discussion, because I think this is what humans can do beautifully, is figuring out the truth or getting as close to as possible by all talking about together, having a completely open discourse where nobody is scared to say certain things. And I won't name any names, but I've had episodes on my own podcast where I will bring up certain topics during our episode while I'm hosting. I like to keep it spicy no matter which side of the mic I'm on. I will bring up things like World War II questions, or I'll bring up the Europa The Last Battle documentary, and people have said like, no, I don't want to be in that episode, or I don't want that to be mentioned in our episode because fear of safety.
Really?
Like, people have literally said they don't want to be associated with this documentary. That's how powerful it is. And so it's crazy. People are scared of the full truth being even in the same room as their name, which is quite insane to me. But that's, everyone has their own choices to make and their own threshold level of how much they're willing to say. And I completely understand some people are taking care of families and whatnot. They need to make a little bit different decisions. For me, myself, since I'm just a single guy wandering around the world, I feel like who better than me to like really push this narrative as much as possible, really shake the boat. Maybe I'll change in the future when I have a wife and kids to take care of. But for now, it's just time to be a berserker and just blow all these fiat rails out of the water so we can create that better future and create a bridge for all of these awakening voices that are popping up all over the world right now. This is an extremely exciting time when you're dialed into the right social circles, just how many people are figuring this stuff out every single day. It's a massive trend. We need to make sure that these people understand that there are solutions out there that are going to fix this. And you and I both believe Noster will be that communication layer and Bitcoin will be the financial layer, both critical for fixing these problems. And that is the most important thing anyone out there can be focusing on, in my opinion. And you can go after any level of it. I go after the really dark, deep, crazy levels of how bad things really are, to the best of my ability. But you can also just make kids' books about Bitcoin. Like, I see children's books teaching kids about Bitcoin. I think that's absolutely amazing. That's probably better than what I'm doing, you know, because it's actually educating the new folks that just need to understand this from birth. And we see all the Bitcoiners out there who are making lots of babies and teaching their kids right, and that's absolutely amazing. Everyone can find somewhere in this movement that they can slot in to their comfort level and their knowledge level and their skill level and immediately make a difference. And that's absolutely beautiful. I love it.
Well, Ben, let me be very clear. I applaud your willingness to go and ask difficult questions. And it's something that someone has to do it. I would like to do the same thing. Like, why can I not talk about that? a phrase that really triggered people here in Australia was calling the lockdowns a medical apartheid. It's like, if you didn't get the jab, you weren't allowed to do certain things in Melbourne. Simple. It's like, okay, well, what is that if it's not some form of apartheid? That's what it is. That's what an apartheid is defined as. But you use that word and people are like, oh, you can't say that. It's like, well, I mean, why not? And of course, like, physical safety, very important. Am I putting my family at risk? This is something I definitely need to be extremely aware of. But if we live in a world in which you can't ask questions, well, what world is that? That's not a future. Like, come on. And so it intrigues me, Ben. I love this idea of like being a complete normie not that long ago. Like, paint us a bit of a picture as to like what your life was like and the flip side of like how you now feel.
All the things, man. I mean, my daily routine was eating a bowl of breakfast cereal, going to work at my Fiat job, being hungry immediately when I got there, eating some more Fiat food for lunch, watching some stupid slop on YouTube for during my lunch break, going home, eating some more seed oils on a nonstick pan. And I think what it really just came down to is, If you aren't really intentional about choosing your sources of information, and this is tricky because we're all brought up and raised a certain way. And this is a big part of the evil of it all is, as we talked about earlier, I was just raised in the public school system and the normie world system. And this is what most people are, the vast majority, as we know. And those people, and this is one of the things I do hate about what some of the Bitcoiners, like the angle they take of like, these people are all just stupid idiots and forget about them. And they're never going to wake up. They're all just going to be normies, NPCs forever. Well, I'm proof that that's not true. People can wake up and they're waking up every day. You just have to connect with them. And I think this is the real battle, is figuring out how to connect with these people who are fully enveloped in the system and emotionally attached to it. It's going to take lots of different voices, lots of different angles. And this is why I'm so excited about this diversifying field of Bitcoin podcasts that we have and Nostr podcasts, more women coming out, more young folks, Gen Z talking about it, because they have voices that they know how to speak to these different audiences. And we need a very wide array of different angles to take on this thing, because you never know when something's going to finally hit enough chinks in that person's mental armor, because that's really what this is. It's when you grow up in the fiat world, you build this armor around your critical thinking brain, your third eye, your whatever you want to call it, like your natural intuition to be a truth seeker and want to understand things. You just have to break that down for people. And it's true that some people will never figure it out. And that's just the reality. There's always going to be a bell curve of different outcomes. And a lot of us who have baby boomer parents and have tried to talk to them about Bitcoin will know this. Some people, if you've had a certain amount of decades of believing certain things, it's just going to be impossible for some people. They're never going to come around. And the game to me, and what I think other people should be viewing it as, is just finding the, well, what's that meme? It says, I'm not here to awaken all the sheep. I'm here to awaken the sleeping lions. I love that, because I think that's really what it comes down to, is spending your energy wisely. If you have been trying to convince your parents of a certain thing for years and years, and they hate it and they don't want to talk about it, then you're spending your energy unwisely. Even if there are people you really love and really care about waking them up on something, I think, again, if we're caring most about the future here, future generations, you have to let go of some of these people that you care about very much and pivot over to awakening the masses as much as you can. And because we need as many numbers as possible of people to be going down this rabbit hole. I believe that. And that's another part of the reason why I started a podcast, is because I was frustrated with not successfully orange pilling my friends and family after years of trying. And so I just think I've all this pent up energy to just rant about Bitcoin to people and spread knowledge, but the people in my immediate circle are not buying it, and they're not even interested. And I know a lot of people out there are feeling that and are frustrated. You need to angle that energy towards something that will not just help other people outside of the friends and family, but it will, you'll create a beautiful yellow brick road of content, whether it be writing or podcasts or whatever medium you like. If you have a message to spread, there's infinite ways to do this. And then those people later, when they come around, or if they finally get blessed by some Instagram reel that they're scrolling through that actually makes them ask questions and think, maybe that crazy Ben was right about something, then you will have a infinite amount of content that you can show them and help them through the rabbit hole more effectively. So it's really better for everybody if you just don't spend your energy on individual people that don't even want to hear it. Spend your energy creating things that are open to everyone. And as we know, Nostr is the best place to do this right now in a social media sense. You can post everything you want on there. And it's just find your niche that you feel good doing, that fits your ikigai, something you're good at, something you love doing, something you can make money doing ideally, and put your heart and soul into it, and opportunities will open.
Opportunities come from all sorts of different places as well when you're podcasting. It's very hard to put like a financial number on the benefits of starting a pod. You can see the costs, an uncountable amount of your own time, but also, you know, if you have to hire specialists to help you do certain things. But Ben, I'm intrigued to kind of like try and cap off my previous question, was the journey that you've been through. Like, how does that now feel? Like when you're not eating cereal for breakfast and when you're not spending your time doing stuff that you know in hindsight is valueless, like how do you now feel?
Well, physically, mentally, spiritually, you name it. I am 30 right now, about to turn 31, and feel way better than I did when I was 18 and 20, you know?
Wow.
Because when you start making these health changes, and this is one of the reasons why I want to have a strong base of health-related content on the podcast. When there's infinite things we could be talking about, there's Bitcoin, there's Nostr, there's history is a lie, there's conspiracy theories, but people aren't going to have the ability to dig through all those deeper topics if their brains don't work.
Yeah.
And if they have some sort of sickness or illness that's dragging them down. So I think that for me, that was a huge part of it. And for me personally, as many people know, the carnivore diet was a major door opening for me of just completely unlocking my brain in a new way. Just the amount of focus and motivation that I have, and the hormonal health is insane. As anyone has done this before, you just improve in every aspect. And that really just lit a fire under my ass to start digging into more things and learning about more things and sharing more things. So to me, I feel so much better than I did just a couple of years ago, even. And that's why I do think health will always be a pinnacle of the content I push out there, and it should be for everyone. And I really think that anyone out there that is producing good information around diet and health is truly helping that ground level foundation of helping people get out of that deepest level of the fiat darkness, so you're then able to use the brain power to dig through other things. Hope that answers that.
No, it does. And it's always more compelling when someone says, I used to do this, but now I do this. And why? You know, because you're the social proof. So what do you eat every day?
Lots and lots of meat, my friend.
Just take me through a normal day, roughly speaking. What does that look like?
Well, the last 3 days, I have had one gigantic bowl of ground beef and butter and salt for dinner, and that's it. I basically bounced between the two of the following for the last couple of years. It's either one meal a day of just a ton of beef and butter for dinner. And when you're eating that much protein and fat in a single meal, you're not hungry again until another 24 hours. So it's not even hard. It's not like I have to white knuckle through the whole day for that meal. It changes your timing. So back when I was eating a bunch of carbs and fiat food, right after let me just say, there have been phases of this health journey for me. I gave you the example earlier of just eating breakfast cereal and total garbage for certain periods, but there were also periods where this was, I think, 2022, where I was following the fruit and honey and meat diet, the Paul Saladino animal based thing.
Yep.
And so my breakfast would be a big bowl of fruit. And I was like, okay, this seems like it fits in those parameters. That's perfect. But I would immediately be hungry again in a couple hours. And I would just be thinking about food all the time. I was still stuck in that food addiction of like always thinking about food and not really having the extra brain space to do other things. And a lot of people are figuring that out. When you just completely remove the carbs altogether and you're only eating the essentials of fat and protein, then you just never think about food anymore. It's just fuel. It's, and a lot of that is you're removing this dopamine reaction to food, because most people don't understand that food is a drug to them. And when you're eating sugar and these exploding flavors, and I'm sorry to say it to all the people who love their fruit and think that it's the most healthy thing ever and it's all natural and it's a different kind of sugar, so it's good for you. Do yourself a favor, look up any fruit and see what it looked like 500 years ago. Because none of these things that we see, whether at the grocery store or even the farmer's market, the most natural one you can grow, the seeds themselves have been extremely manipulated over several hundred years to be these exploding sugar bombs of flavor so they can sell more of these things that trigger people's dopamine receptors, get them to buy more. And if you go far enough back in history, we never used to have those things. That was survival food. People would have tubers and berries and roots and these things heavily fermented as a survival food if they failed their hunt and weren't able to eat meat. And this is a whole crazy discussion. I don't have time to go into all the different aspects of it, of why I believe that carnivore is the best. And even the fruit, honey, and meat version of this ancestral diet that's now the hottest trend on social media in the health world, I would say. Carnivore is even better. So just test it yourself. See what you find. And I have a ton of podcast episodes about that go through that. And I think that it's a really important one to at least try out for yourself and see how it works. Because like I said, for me, it's got me feeling better than ever in every single aspect.
And the fun part is you tried it yourself. At one stage, you were doing a form of it, still including fruit, and then you've changed it. And that's the absolute key. Coffee, yes or no? Alcohol, yes or no?
So I should say this. Those things are definitely not part of the carnivore diet. What I should mention is that I personally am not 100% perfect all the time. Everyone's different. The one hill that I will die on is that carnivore is what perfect is. That's the North Star. Every once in a while, I'll go off and I'll cheat a little bit here and there. And some people don't even like the concept of calling it cheating. And you know, they say, if you're not 100% perfect, you're not a real carnivore, whatever. Helsinki right now. I went to a party with a bunch of Swedes at a barbecue the other day, and there was a bunch of beer there. I had a couple beers. You know, like I'm not going to be 100% perfect every day all the time. I am going to be 100% honest with myself and say, this is a trade-off I'm making. I'm going to have some poison because this is experience that I want to have.
Yeah.
And it would be. Just understand that you're absolutely making a trade-off of health for a certain experience. That's the way that I look at things. And I would say, for me, a big decider on if I'm going to go off plan or not is, will this thing create an experience for me? You know, I think that's a pretty good measuring stick I've used for a while. Because what's an example? Getting a giant pizza and eating it in my room, that's not an experience. That's just you being a lazy slob and poisoning yourself for no good reason other than feel bad for yourself. But going to have some drinks with some friends in a foreign country with a bunch of crazy people everywhere, for me, sometimes that's worth it. Everyone has their own decision to make there.
And that's what I found difficult when I've tried Carnivore myself. I've done it twice now. Is it's so restrictive that there were certain things that I couldn't do that I missed. And so I think it's about a balance, isn't it? And everyone's different. So Ben, I've got time for basically one more area just to run through and then we'll finish up. It's really something you mentioned earlier, this idea of self-learning. So what have been, if you could, like some of the highest level things that you've taught yourself and largely probably around the podcast that that have made the biggest difference?
Man, yeah, I would say it's hard to decide between all the different topics I've really dove into on the podcast, because this is a journal of my learning. I would say I obviously do learning outside of the podcast itself and try to use that to frame up and find good guests to bring on to talk about certain topics. Bitcoin, Noster, the carnivore diet, history, all these conspiracy theories I'm a fan of, those are, I would call all of them self-learned, because I just went on and started researching them and eventually got to the level where I felt confident enough that this is something interesting to discuss, that I found someone I believe to be real smart and come on and talk about it on a podcast and try to help other people catch up to where I had been in that specific rabbit hole. But it's really tough to say any specific one. I think that all these things that people hear about on a podcast, I've learned about myself and so many other people. If you're listening to this podcast right now, you are teaching yourself a new thing or a new perspective. And I think everyone should really give themselves a pat on the back. And it's, even if some friend may have turned you on to this podcast or turned you on to Bitcoin or given you the Bitcoin standard, you still owe yourself the credit of diving in yourself and learning about it. And you should consider yourself a self-learner for that reason. That's a good feather in your cap, because most people out there today are not self-learners. They are consumers of propaganda without knowing it. They turn on the TV, they turn on the mainstream media propaganda on whatever phone, tablet, computer they're using, and they are just consuming these headlines and letting it form an opinion for them. And that is what we do not want for the future, because that's going to create a bunch of mindless slaves who are going down a dark path. So everyone should become a self-learner and listen to more podcasts like mine and Jake's here, I believe, and come to your own conclusions about which ones you like the most, which ones you think bring you the most signal. And we could all be self-learners. I think this is the ultimate decentralization of education, where we all take it into our own hands and become our own self-learners.
Awesome. We won't have time for this. We could do a whole another 2 or 3 hours, I'm sure. But one of the main reasons that I'm homeschooling my kids is that I think that if you can self-learn, you can do whatever you like. And so combine that with a healthy mind, healthy body, and communication skills, that 25-year-old is incredibly capable of doing basically anything they want, providing they self-learn. And so it's almost like a mindset or a philosophy, isn't it? Just keep going, keep figuring out new things, keep asking why. It's wonderful to watch, like from a distance, as we know, we've been trying to catch each other on a pod for a while, and the progress that I've started seeing people making is really extraordinary. So yeah, Ben, listen, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you so much for your time today. Final one, just to hand off, if people want to reach out and get in touch, how do they do that?
Yeah, wherever they're listening to this, I'll be on there too. I got YouTube, Rumble, podcast, the Ben Werman podcast. I have a website with all those links, benwerman.com, and all the socials. Noster, of course, is our favorite. Go to Noster first, but if you're still a little slow and you're still on Twitter, I'll be on there too. Just trying to get people to come over to Noster.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Ben.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jake. Great chatting.